A lot of modern music skirts the line between beauty and ugliness. It challenges us to listen differently. In fact, it's hard to think of any pioneering music that didn't inspire outrage at first. For example, in the early 20th century, as visual artists started experimenting with abstraction and surrealism, musicians were experimenting too. David Stubbs is the author of Fear of Music, Why People Get Rothko But Don't Get Stockhausen. Jim Fleming asked him why it seems like avant-garde music doesn't get the same respect that avant-garde visual art does, even though they both got started at the same time, the creative days of the 1920s.
Yeah, and I think they both came from the sort of same sort of wellspring of kind of cultural energy, and at a certain time, the dawn of the 20th century. Now, there was a sort of synergy at the time, and people like Schoenberg, Arnold Schoenberg, and Kandinsky, the painter, they almost like recognized each other as kindred spirits. Kandinsky looked at Schoenberg and think, well, yeah, that's what I'm doing in painting. And Schoenberg looked at Kandinsky and said, yes, and vice versa.
Didn't Schoenberg and Kandinsky even promised to work with each other at one point?
They did. They were going to have some sort of synergized event.
Actually, I'm beginning to wonder whether we simply haven't listened enough to avant-garde music.
Yeah, it is marginal. I think abstract art is easier to consume. That's one thing. I mean, it's, say, a sort of difficult canvas by a Rothko. You go to, say, the Tate Modern and see something like that, or Museum of Modern Art in New York or whatever, and it's within your field of vision. You can spend as much or as little time in front of it as you please. It isn't kind of all enveloping. Music, of course, it's not like that. Music, say a piece by Stockhausen, you might be there for 90 minutes. You're in for the long haul.
Right. Well, I was thinking about it and realizing that when I see a piece of art that I don't understand, I can look at it, close my eyes, think about it, look at it again. You don't have that experience with avant-garde music because it is all around you. It's almost as though it interferes with your ability to think about it.
Yes, in a sense. I mean, you said it, you can close your eyes. Of course, you have eyelids and you don't have earlids. And
right.
Yes, music has that kind of possibility of being distressing and invasive, especially people like Stockhausen. Sometimes he would arrange the speakers for sort of pieces that he did. It wouldn't just be something that was just in front of you, coming at you in front of you. He would arrange it all around the auditorium. So the music is coming at you from all sides. And it may be that goes back to kind of very early sort of caveman days or whatever, where any sort of sudden noise, unexpected noise, is going to sort of strike fear into you. And I think that probably is still the case for people now. And of course, music can sometimes have that distressing, invasive effect, and especially avant-garde music, because it's inherently and formally, it's meant to be kind of surprising, unexpected, coming at you from somewhere unexpected.
But I want to go back to those early days in some ways, because there was a fuller range than I think we recognize now. Edgar Reyes, who wrote Amérique, which is not as disturbing, if you will, as Stockhausen or as Schoenberg. It's new and it's different and it challenges you, but it is not as random, I guess.
Well, that's right. I mean, that work, Amérique, it was written, it was about 1918, that sort of time, 1918, 1921. I think he sort of spent some time over it and then eventually revised it. Within that piece, you get a sense of the transition of music from the 19th to 20th century almost, because it starts off in a very sort of Debussy-esque, Stravinsky-esque sort of way, in the sort of dawn of the piece, as it were. But then all of a sudden, the music suddenly erupts with these kind of very vertical crescendos, very American, very New York, almost like skyscrapers kind of emerging music, whatever. That sense of kind of new urban contemporary 20th century beginnings, and it really reflects a sense of America in a way that classical music really hadn't done at all before, not even really people like Charles Ives as such. But of course, the big thing we've got is the sirens. You get these kind of sirens wailing through, and obviously they're kind of, he had his window open in his apartment near the Hudson River as he was writing it, and these sounds would come wafting in through his window. And there's a couple of things going on there. One, it's the idea of, like, which I think is at the heart of the avant-garde project, as far as I'm concerned. It's collapsing the walls between art and life. You're getting the actual elements of life incorporated into the music in the way that Picasso incorporates, like, sort of clippings of Le Figaro into collage pieces and stuff like that. And then also you've got the idea of the pitch, this pitch that incorporates the element of noise into music, something way beyond the whole sort of 12-tone system, etc., etc.
Do you think people would find it more approachable if they could think about it in visual terms?
Possibly. It's curious. I think that people accept a great deal more visual chaos than they do oral chaos. Another reason I think people have problems with avant-garde music is that they think it's like a kind of cryptic crossword or something like that. They think that they have to decipher something. And you actually don't. It's not like some sort of complex mathematical or algebraic formula rendered in sound. It's simply a case of being receptive to the idea of sounds not becoming, you know, sort of following the kind of normal orthodox pathways or whatever. It's really not necessarily about having to kind of interpret anything.
Brings us to Stockhausen. Stockhausen really made his breakthroughs in electronic music. One of his most famous works is called Kontakte.
Kontakte, yes.
Kontakte. Can you tell us about that?
Which means contacts. Well, yes, it was written about 50 years ago. He arranged it so that, like, the audience is in the centre and the music comes at them via four channels, which were arranged, like, in speakers, were in each kind of corner of the sort of square within which the audience is sitting. And even at one point, he used some sort of rotation table at one point, so he had all these various mics in which he could kind of, like, fling even other sounds at the audience as they kind of listen to it. So it goes back to what I was saying before. It's the idea of the way it's constructed allows for sounds to come from absolutely any angle, take any kind of sort of shape or duration or pitch or intensity or whatever. I mean, in fact, Stockhausen, I think he actually functions as a composer sort of better than, say, other people working in electronic music or music concrete, because I think he has a kind of innate sort of symphonic sense, a great innate sense of drama.
David Stubbs' book is called Fear of Music.